Hi, I'm Jennifer Clark. Thank you, everyone, for staying past 5 o'clock, which is usually hard at a conference. I've been working in the women's prison in Rhode Island since 1998. We went tobacco-free in 2003, and I thought it was a very important area to study, something that people usually don't think about. I think people often think prisons, cigarettes are, you know, it's money, but it can really become a form of abuse. From what I've been told by inmates, cigarettes cost $10 a piece. In the federal system, I was told by a man that they're $20 a piece. So when we say that prisons are smoke-free, they really tend to be smoke-free because an individual cigarette tends to be more expensive than heroin, which is also against the rules in prison. But the women generally tell me it's almost impossible to get a cigarette. So am I pressing the wrong button? Oh no, it just does that little blue thing. Okay. A lot of people go through the American correctional system every year. There are about 12 million arrests and incarcerations every year of about 9 million individuals, which leads to about 1 in 8 American smokers passing through corrections every year. 1 in 8 of every smokers goes to prison or jail. That's a huge number. Tobacco use among prisoners is approximately 3 times that of the general population, and you would think, a lot of people tell me, you know, they're smoke-free, so they must just quit when they get out. We found that about 50% of people return to smoking within an hour of release. So it's not a very effective intervention. I generally don't recommend incarceration as an intervention for just about anything, but really doesn't work for smoking. Within 6 months, one published study showed that 97% of inmates had returned to smoking. And so increasingly, prisons are going smoke-free. The Federal Bureau of Prisons, which operates prisons throughout the United States, they have gone smoke-free, so no tobacco products allowed anywhere on site. And this map of the United States shows the darker states are the ones that have total smoking bans. So this means you can't buy tobacco products from the store orders, correctional officers aren't allowed to smoke on site. Basically, tobacco is really off limits, and it's really, for the correctional staff, it's not easy to get in and out of the prison. So, you know, generally people go on their coffee break and they can just walk outside. It can take me sometimes 15 minutes to get in and out of the building. So being smoke-free is quite significant in these settings. Some have just indoor bans, and there are a few states that are hanging on that have no bans at all. So forced abstinence of incarceration, some people still consider themselves smokers. So I, you know, talked to a woman who hasn't smoked in 10 years, and she's a smoker. She hasn't thought of herself as quitting. She's going to smoke as soon as she gets out. Some people just say they're paused smokers, ex-smokers. So just because somebody is not smoking does not mean that they have quit smoking, which is unusual in public health. Some similar situations, basic military training, 6 weeks of forced tobacco abstinence, obviously different than prison. People generally plan for this. They know that they're going to that it's going to be smoke-free. They might have a patch or something, but they know it's going to happen. Pregnancy. People don't always know what's going to happen, but generally there's a time where there's increased motivation to quit, so a temporary time where people might quit. Prolonged hospitalizations might also be similar to incarceration. But in all these situations, most people return to smoking. And in fact, basic military training, more than 100% of people return or become smokers after leaving, so non-smokers become smokers after leaving basic military training. Which means it must be pretty bad. evidence-based practices for tobacco cessation don't really fit in this setting very well. Most medications are for nicotine, and all of my patients have completed nicotine withdrawal in the study that I'll present. The average time since the last cigarette has been 2 years, so you don't want to use nicotine replacement in that setting. Most behavioral interventions really target getting people to quit, especially when we're not dealing with children or youth, we're dealing with adults who've been smoking for a while. So they're really setting a quit date. That we don't really have to do in this setting. We're trying to change the mindset to, when I get out, I'm a non-smoker. So our challenges are, we didn't have an evidence-based practice to bring into the setting. People sort of, they underestimate the need for help. They think, I'm not smoking, I'm not really going to need any help. A lot of the behaviors that you might practice with CBT, you can't really practice in prison. People are often released to drug treatment facilities where you're really surrounded by smokers. In some facilities, over 90% of individuals smoke, so you've gone from being smoke-free to surrounded by smokers. People also say smoking is a sign of independence. So here's something that I can do that's legal. They're not going to, if I'm on parole, they're not going to be putting me back in prison for smoking. And they've had every part of their life controlled. As soon as you walk out the door, a lot of people really feel that there's some freedom in smoking a cigarette. And it might not be a high priority with everything else after leaving prison. But we also have some great opportunities. People have completed nicotine withdrawal. That first 2 weeks is usually a really tough time. And by the time we talk to people about smoking cessation, they've gone through that, so it's not even an issue anymore. They've experienced changes in physical symptoms. The cough has already gotten better. They're not wheezing as much. They're able to exercise more. And also, they've undergone other substance use treatment quite often. So you can use a lot of the tools for other addictions towards the nicotine. So we came up with a project. We did a randomized clinical trial. We called it Project WISE. Some of the inmates came up with a name. They liked it. We have a little owl as our logo. And it's a combination of motivational interviewing and cognitive behavioral therapy. We recruited 260 men and women, and basically we include anyone who was a former smoker. They don't have to want to quit. They can have already decided that they're going to smoke as soon as they get out. We still want them in the study. We also approach everybody who's getting out. So it's not like they have to find us or be motivated to be in a smoking cessation study. We approach everybody. So we wanted to get people who really weren't interested in smoking cessation. People are very bored in prison, so we get a lot of people interested in participating in projects, mostly because there's nothing better to do. Our control group, we have some very boring old educational videos, and they love them. One's on brushing your teeth. It's just it's easier to get people engaged in public health interventions when there's not a lot of competition. So for Project WISE, we first do a baseline assessment on the computer. Each session lasts between 45 and 60 minutes. And this is a sample of our printout. And so they've entered all this information onto the computer, so when they meet with the interventionist, they know how long they've been smoking, how long it's been since their last cigarette, has it been 8 weeks, has it been 8 years, if they've gotten out before, if they've been incarcerated before, how long after getting out did they smoke a cigarette last time? So did they smoke within that hour, or did they try and quit? And so if they waited a week, how were they able to make it through that first week? We ask about their readiness to quit. We go through, part of MI is giving some feedback on your risk of smoking-related illnesses. We wanted something colorful so we could just talk about PAC years, if they have other medical conditions. We were trying to get data and numbers that could really match up with this, but this color scheme seemed like the easiest way to go. I think it's a pretty honest assessment. You know, the more you smoke, the higher your risk is. If you have asthma, diabetes, heart disease, your risk, obviously, of complications from smoking obviously goes up. And people liked seeing this and seeing that if they quit, they could, you know, their risk could also go back. So just because you've smoked for 20 years doesn't mean you're always going to be at very high risk of heart disease. We asked the ATSQ questionnaire, American Thoracic Society questionnaire, about physical symptoms from smoking, and people love that. We asked first, how frequently did you have a cough or bring up sputum or have chest pain? Think about the 2 weeks before you came into prison. And then after they answered that, we'd ask the exact same questions about the past 2 weeks. And people could see this huge difference. You know, you're right, I can now walk up a flight of stairs without getting short of breath. And we really work on those positive changes to help motivate people to either want to quit or want to stay tobacco-free. The cognitive behavioral therapy sessions focus on dealing with family and friends once they get out. We talk a lot about the first day out, and it became obvious pretty early on in our project that the ride home was incredibly important. You know, somebody would come pick you up, it's like, here's your celebratory cigarette. And unless somebody had made that phone call before the ride, you know, mom, I'm smoke-free now. Can you leave the cigarette at home, or can you smoke before you pick me up? That you know, first hour of smoking, that really helped. Methods for saying no to cigarettes, and because for so many people in this population, their friends are all smokers, so they came up with a lot of really good methods for saying no to cigarettes and still being able to socialize the way that they wanted to. They would do some role playing and some projects between sessions. One thing that they brought up was to, for the officers who smoked, people who used to be smokers, they would smell the smoke and think, that smells disgusting, and that's what I'm going to smell like again. So we would say, you know, kind of subtly sniff people. But, you know, to really think about it, when you smell, you don't like that smell, you want to do everything and make suggestions very carefully in a prison setting. But, you know, that smell, that trigger is so important. So if you can get used to that, you can smell tobacco, smell the products, and you don't have a cigarette available, so you can really deal with all of your thoughts, your feelings, like, oh, I really want a cigarette. Oh, but I can smell it, I'm okay, I'm not gonna die if I don't have a cigarette right now. They've gotten, there are a lot of stressful times at prison, so, you know, in general with smoking cessation, we're always like talking about how to deal with that stressful time, whereas with this population, they've dealt with a lot of stress without cigarettes. We had to really talk about dealing with celebration because they haven't had a lot of good times while they've been incarcerated. So how do you deal, like, how are you going to deal with seeing your kids again? How are you going to deal with seeing your old friends? Or New Year's Eve was a bad time for our project. But we try and give them the tools for dealing with a celebration. And then on their last session, we talk, we sort of have a plan for good health. And we talk about smoking, but it's also other things that are important. So it's not just about the smoking, but maybe finishing up high school, getting a GED. What else goes towards the healthy life that they envision for themselves? So if we can try and weave that in with the smoking cessation as much as possible, that has been very helpful. Reuniting with children, so that being smoke-free and reuniting with children has also been quite a motivator. So we had limited funds, so we only were funded for a 3-week follow-up. which you would think is not very long, but all, you have to think that most people were relapsed to smoking within the first few days of getting out of prison. So our intervention group, almost 25% were still tobacco-free, and this was confirmed by urine 3 weeks after release from prison. The control group was 7%. They're pretty equal on age, the amount of money that they had spent on cigarettes, and the age at when they started smoking. So, contrary to what a lot of people told me, we can make some differences in smoking rates in this population. A lot of people were telling me, you know, don't worry about smoking. It's the drug use. It's everything else. But we can make a difference in smoking, and I think that makes a difference in other areas of their lives. One woman referred to it as a gateway drug, which I thought was funny because it was reminding me of Nancy Reagan and smoking as a gateway drug. But then she expanded on it. She says it's a way of getting back into the lifestyle. I can't afford cigarettes, so if I start smoking, then I start stealing cigarettes. If I start stealing, then I'm with my old friends, and then I'm using drugs. So I think focusing on something that's not illegal is really beneficial to the men and women. Some lessons learned. Many people had never even thought about not smoking. They just had not, it hadn't even crossed their minds to not smoke when getting out. So just talking about it helped. The fact that somebody feels like it's independence, one woman talked about, you know, seeing all the other women getting out and smoking as soon as they got out, but also feeling like, you know, it's a different kind of prison that you're getting into, because as soon as you start smoking, you know, you're chained to that again. The plan for good health has been very well received. Just in general, this is not a population of great planners, so having a plan, something very concrete written out, people have loved it. A lot of people have brought their plans to their follow-up visits and have asked us to help them update them, and that's been really nice to see. I already talked about the physical symptoms. Some requests, people wanted more gross pictures. For some reason, I thought we shouldn't have gross pictures, but that was a request, so I think when we do the project again, we're going to pull in some gross pictures. Also, most of the participants really liked talking about something that wasn't illegal, something just for them, just for their health. The fact that people would talk about smoking with everything else going on, that was very, very popular. And I have a few other quotes, but I think I'll just stop here. Thank you very much.
Thanks.